Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club. Tonight, I'm your host, Charles, joined with my lovely wife, Jalavet, on the Wheel of Steel. Say hello, Jalavet.
Hello, Jalavet.
All right. Night.
Hey.
Hey. We're featuring The Falsification of African Consciousness, subtitled Eurocentric History, Psychiatry, and the Politics of White Supremacy by Dr. Amos N. Wilson. And we're in part one of the lecture series, and this first part is entitled European Historiography and Oppression Exposed, an African Analysis and Perspective. Last week, we wrapped up the meeting with the section in this in the lecture entitled History and Societal Amnesia. We will follow up with the consequences of historical amnesia. Though this section is long, I started to skip it, but it would be a serious disruption to the continuity of the topics that Dr. Wilson was covering, dealing with history and psychological the shared psychological experience of a group. And I felt I would be an injustice to the to the study to skip over it.
Brother Means with us tonight.
Hey, what's going on, Brother Means?
What's going on?
What's up?
Hey.
What's up? Hot dogs and freedom fries. Yeah.
Fat guy, I forgot I was gonna put something that with the Uncle Jam, won't you?
I'm hearing fireworks from this morning when I got up. You know, they were starting early with the fireworks and stuff.
Oh yeah,
they're doing it now.
I feel so festive.
Yes. We got to you know, be happy for masses.
And free. And free. I forgot. I feel so festive and free.
Hey.
I love America.
Mm-hmm. I believe tonight will be...
I don't believe any of you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll be out of this part. We'll be in part two up on the next... And we're starting on page 33. Everybody, have your text with you.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Yeah.
If you, so many of y'all know y'all got a copy, and others, I know y'all went out and ran to your bookstores and online accounts and bought you one written on expedited delivery.
Absolutely.
I know you did that.
I wouldn't expect anything less.
Nothing less, because we know you're dedicated to this cause in every way. Especially reforming that person in the mirror.
Certainly, 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 Lord.
Because that's where the transformation begins. It begins with me.
With the man in the mirror.
That's right.
R.I.P. Michael Jackson.
Right. Right. He told us. Right. So here we go. The consequences of historical amnesia. He says, in the interest of time, I'll just end my analysis of European history and look a bit at another issue. I'm really more concerned about what happens when we don't know or forget our history. Eurocentric history is used to motivate forgetting in the African personality to create amnesia, to maintain repression. Many of us as individuals seek to forget our history and do not want to confront our history because of the anxiety, the anger, the fear, the shame, the guilt we feel when we read about some aspect of the African experience, and hence we'll often stay away from it. We think we've escaped this effect thereby. We hear some of our uninformed children say, well, that was back there 100 years ago. That ain't got nothing to do with me today. The black child is at this very moment is still affected and suffering from the slave experience, whether he or she knows it or not. In fact, Russell Jacoby says in his book Social Amnesia, and I quote, exactly because the past is forgotten, its rules unchallenged, to be transcended, it must be remembered. Social amnesia is society's repression of remembrance, end quote. Simply because we choose to forget a traumatic event, simply because we choose not to learn of a traumatic history and a history that make us feel ashamed does not mean that history is not controlling our behavior. Simply because we don't know our history and may not have heard of it does not mean that the history does not control our behavior.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most profound things we've learned in psychology is that the most powerful forces that shape human behavior are those factors that are consciously not remembered by human beings, that are unknown by the person, are those experiences the individual can swear he's never had. That is one of the most, that is one of the paradoxes of human behavior, that the very things that shape us and make us behave the way we do, see the world the way we see it, and relate to people the way we relate to them, are those things that occurred in our lives at points we cannot remember or recall. The personality is in part shaped in the womb itself, shaped by the genes, shaped in part by the birth process itself, shaped in the very first 2 years of life. Yet very few, if any of us, can remember in detail those first 2 years of life. Yet it is those very first 2 years that determine our behavior from 8 to 80. And so the idea that we don't know, that we're not aware of certain early experiences, does not mean that we have escaped their effects. In fact, it puts us more profoundly under the influence of these unknown forces. Amnesia is a state where a person seeks unconsciously to forget aspects of his or her past life because apparently those aspects are painful. Therefore, the individual seeks to rid himself of them. Consequently, by ridding himself of his conscious remembrance of painful experiences, he seeks to rid himself of anxieties and fears connected with them. He may then succeed in forgetting those experiences completely, to the point where he cannot recall them, but this does not mean that those experiences do not continue to operate within his personality. There are those of us who are made ashamed of our history of enslavement, who are made ashamed of the distorted presentation of African history, are made to think that prior to slavery, we were essentially culturally invisible and savage, and only achieved visibility and civility when the European came on the scene. Many of us attempt to repress any knowledge of our African slave experience. We shouldn't heed the fact that a person and people who suffer from social amnesia live lives that are determined by fear, anxiety, terror, and trauma. When we attempt to escape our history because we're afraid of it, when we escape knowledge because it terrifies and makes us feel ashamed, then it is terror and fear and shame that determine our lives. We then live not in terms of our reality and in terms of the integration of our reality, but in terms of what we are afraid of. In other words, what we are ashamed of, what we are trying to hide, what we are trying not to confront our lives with, life is then lived in terms of denial, in terms of escape and addiction. Many of the murders, deaths, and much of the destruction that we see in our communities today are the result of people trying to escape history and living their lives in terror and fear of their own history and reality. That is why I contend that history is directly related to our concrete existence. It is not something you happen to take in school. It is part of our real lives because without it, it will make us take dope, kill, steal. And it will make us do all kinds of terrible things because our lives are not determined by relating to history appropriately, but be determined by fear. Those people and parents who have escaped their own history as a result of trying to escape anxiety, fear, shame, and so forth may pass escapism onto their children as history. That history of escapism then becomes a part of their personality, and they become vulnerable to addictions and all other kinds of terrible habits and orientations in the world. Why do we think we were robbed of our history? If it was not to serve this purpose, I'd like to pause right here,
mm-hmm.
this lecture. And he's explained, we've covered like what, two and 1/8 pages of this particular portion of the part one of the lecture. And he's making an extremely solid granite case for the social ills that we see in our community, psychological ills, is solely because we refuse to confront our past, and that we are functioning as patients in denial. And we passed on a tradition, a heritage, if you will, of escapism, of amnesia.
Mm-hmm.
That is Black history. I believe we were having a conversation about African inventions in terms of instruments, and we were talking about the banjo and the guitar being African instruments brought over here, and we continued to use them in captivity. And we allowed the Negro aristocracy to ridicule us and shame us out of our cultural invention, our cultural property.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't want to connect with that. Muddy Waters complained about, he was mentioning about how the blues lost favor with Black folks because we didn't want to be reminded about slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way to keep making money, they had to play white only audiences. You know, and we see that happening today with rap, with R&B. It's shifting.
Mm-hmm.
That is our culture. We do something for a while, we give it up. What Paul Mooney said something very interesting. One thing he said, Black folks are not loyal.
Mm-hmm.
He said Black folks are not loyal fans. And I noticed one thing about recording artists that want longevity in the entertainment business. And I'm not just talking about. I'm just using entertainment as a
an example.
Right, for that we all can relate to in terms of observing and recalling and measuring African diaspora captive behavior. Paul Mooney said this particular part here, but it's something you'll notice. Every artist, if they want to last and have, expand their career and achieve great success, they must cross over.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a few entertainers that defy that. The Isley Brothers didn't cross over. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
A's didn't cross over. But for most people, they see in that business, you see they see crossing over meaning getting on, back in the 70s, it was about getting on, white FM radio, light rock stations, getting on there. From the Five crossed over.
Mm-hmm.
Groups like that, and they talk about all this money they made, and, it was so great for their career. But they also complained about having lost their soul, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever see Shining Stars, the documentary, they didn't say it like that. They said they couldn't get the magic back.
Back, right.
They couldn't do it. They tried to go back hard with something, whatever. They couldn't do it. I think when they could, not that they couldn't play it, they couldn't. The people who they sold out to wouldn't allow them. But the largest part, they did lose the magic because the groups were splitting up and they started having all kinds of personnel problems. But the point is that you got to stay true to the game. That is true to your people, true to your culture. You got to hold it down. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe many of us who were members of this book club and people who are listening for the first or maybe second time don't quite understand what's so big about forgetting a little bit. We can't remember everything. Well, hey, we don't remember everything, but we're in the process of remembering. That's what this book club is doing. We're looking at our past through the writings of these various analysts, Black psychologists.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to look at slave narratives, first-hand accounts of life on a plantation. Runaways, that kind of thing. People who are escaping the cruelties of American torture hellhole,
mm-hmm.
in its birth, as we were being formed and shaped in this hellish existence here in America. And we're eventually gonna cover that. And that's all a part of this remembering. And this is the most difficult part, I believe. That's the most difficult part. I think this is the difficult part of the process, but I think going to this actual
slave narrative accounts, reading the events, basically helping us all identify with the victim. We're going to identify with Harriet Jacobs. We're going to identify with Frederick Douglass and many others. Anybody else have anything to say about that? Anything that was read in that first section before we continue? And the number is area code 323-580-5707. And hopefully you have a copy of your text. You're following along, and you can address anything that you think is important to contribute to the discussion. Okay? I'll continue then.
Hold on just a second. This is Nana, please. Welcome.
Liberty Burgers and Freedom Fries.
Hey.
Hey, how y'all doing?
No way. You ain't cool.
How y'all doing? I'm doing fine. Okay, I have a question or a comment. What about the extreme, that's the other end of the extreme, that you have black folks who are now, they are Moors. The Romans were not white. This kind of, I don't know what I want to even call it at this point, because you have a group of us who can't wrestle with our history as enslaved people. So they romanticize that to the point to where, you know, Thomas Jefferson and Sally Fleming were husband and wife almost to the point when they had these conversations. So now you have this other group that's like, you know, well, we were never slaves at all. I mean, you know, when Columbus came here, you know, he saw Africans, and, you know, we have a group of us who were never enslaved, and, you know, the Romans were not white, and, you know, that type of stuff. So how do you all, you know, figure that into the conversation of what Wilson is addressing now.
Oh, yeah, I know you're saying, for the amnesia, and some people are saying, well, that's not a part of their history. But I don't know, over the past 500 years, yeah, there may have been some Africans over, we do know, you know, Van Sertima talks about, Egyptians and Canaanites coming over here and various other ethnic groups and having colonies in the so-called Americas. It is all, and were there Algerian popes, or they called Numidians at that time? Yeah, they did exist. That was an Algerian pope, it was the Algerian Caesar. But, you know, those Algerians were awarded for betraying Carthage. They were awarded.
I know, but I was asking, like, how, you know, Amos Wilson, he just discussed how it is that, you know, we have this amnesia about our history, and I'm asking, well, what about the other extreme that people are doing? Is they have so much amnesia that they are now identifying, what, attempting to identify with their oppressors, or they're just trying to connect themselves to a group that they're not necessarily connected to. You understand me? That's why you're here now, you know. I'm an Olmec Moor, or you know, the Romans were not white. You know, my people have been in America for, I don't know, 20,000 years, you know, not 500 years or whatever the case may be, because they don't want to connect themselves to the history of enslaved Africans. They don't want that line. They don't want that connection at all. So I was asking, you know, how is it, I mean, how do you put that into the context of what Amos Wilson is discussing now?
Yeah, I was giving a very long answer. I was recounting some of that history for some of our listeners who may not be aware of some of that.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I was just going through the details, so you know, for the uninformed. Some people may have never heard of that. So I was going ahead and just listing some events, some person, not necessarily personalities, because I don't know some of the names of these people, but that they can look them up on time. But I was just valid. Yes, it is. Yes, there were Olmecs that, well, you know, Olmecs were not African, but those Africans came over here and joined the Olmecs, and they built, and they actually, the Africans built the pyramids in down there. So, or up there, rather, because south is up, right? So.
Right, exactly. Yes.
Right.
Right.
South is up.
Right.
North is down. So.
Right.
The point we're making is that we got these brothers and sisters here today in our time saying, you know what? That's not, they're just going to select that as not a part of their heritage. But the point is, there's the attack on the gifted melanated people, that is us, we gifted with this gift of blackness, the attack on us worldwide. So it doesn't matter if you were here. When the European came, he was coming to take over whatever it was that they had or we had. So it doesn't matter if you was all made here, you suffered white supremacy. So you on our side, either way, you are oppressed. Whatever the old mix, the black old mix had, they lost it when Europeans took it over. So they need to just really give up that trying to not identify with being African. Because I told one brother, I said, he was rapping with me about it, and I was interested. But I said, you know they had indigenous American, you know, what we call Indians or whatever, South American people, they had colonies in Africa too, right? And so they went back, mm-hmm. So he was like, oh yeah, that's true. So you're looking at that. We were going back and forth. The European came, disrupted our travel. We're not traveling the world like we used to. The black people, Africans here, were dominating the land that they were currently dominating when it fell to the Portuguese and the Spanish. So without no respect for their position that, oh, well, we were enslaved. Yes, you were. Because any time they saw a black person, they put chains on if they could catch him. You see what I'm saying? Now, mm-hmm. you can't sit up and nobody, I don't think nobody can say for certain that every African or Paleo-American or whatever that was here before the Europeans showed up wasn't murdered or captured and put into chattel slavery. Like they just said, oh, y'all black people was here when we got here. We're going to leave y'all alone. We're only going to, slave and murder the ones that we brought with us. That's not true. Because if that were the case, they would still be here walking around, and the European white supremacist empire, colonial empire, would not have expanded the way that it has. Right. So the case of how Amos is dealing with it is that those people are basically amnesiatics too. The people to bring it, no, my answer to the conclusion, what you're saying, they fit into they're escaping, they're creating a fantasy, of a past. You refer to it as romanticized, but it's right that, you know, I call it as a fantasy of what it was like to be a non-transported African, wasn't transported by a European. And so that their existence was uninterrupted by slavery, a servitude, that they had nothing to do with it. The experience that is. Well, they may not have had nothing to do with the Middle Passage, but they had a whole lot to do with the brutality in terms of experience living it out. Or some groups like the Moors boast about participating in this Maafa. They can mm-hmm. say, oh, we brought Africans over here, too. We had slave ships. So we worked and helped with building Washington, D.C. Benjamin Banneker was a Moor. Oh, really? Thank you. That's, you should be proud of that. I definitely go down there and look at his fez, wherever it is on display somewhere, and take their initiation, where they're going to put a noose around your neck and put a knife to your heart and say, oh, how great it is to join that brotherhood of white supremacy. But everybody's in there black, so that makes it better, right? So that's the people we're dealing with. They disassociate themselves from the horror of white supremacy, yet participate in its maintenance, and really they participate in its construction too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just got to let them people tell us and let me. I don't discourage them from telling me about how wonderful their Middle Passage African existence was, and how, you know, how great it is, how I should connect with that portion of the experience and not the other. So, you know, just let them tell me all about it, and maybe, you know, they keep revealing what they plan on doing with the rest of us in doing this particular process.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to feel open to mm-hmm. share with as much as they're willing to share. I wouldn't discourage them either. Just let them talk.
And then there's a long list of people who say that they aren't oppressed anymore, that you can only be oppressed by it.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to figure out, how are you only oppressed if you allow it? What does that mean? So that if you just say that you aren't oppressed, then magically you aren't.
I mean, that's interesting. I mean, I mean, that's what Wilson talked about. We said we got to stop being what we are, so the white, so the European cannot be what he is right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, we would have to have a group consciousness of not allowing white supremacy, not tolerating it. We don't have that.
So is that group mm-hmm. consciousness just to say it? I mean, do we just...
No, it is all about action. Yeah, you have to create a new reality in your mind, and so you have to believe it with all of your essence.
Right.
Have spirituality to carry it out. But when the rubber meets the road, putting that faith into practice, those people are faithless.
Right. They're just trying to name it and claim it.
They're just trying to name it and claim it, right. But it takes some. We got to take some faith infused with works.
Right.
Better go back to some Thessalonians or something. That. Faith.
Okay.
But that works is dead.
Okay.
Right?
I don't know how to take any of this because I, you know, my family is from China. we didn't, you know, we were here earlier.
Way earlier. Worked on that railroad thing.
Yeah, you're working on that railroad.
The dollar. They came here during the gold rush.
Right. That's what you're saying.
Right.
That's why your hair looks fat.
Because I'm part Swedish anyway.
You said you were Norwegian the other time. Now,
that's 1/8 Norwegian. I'm 1/8, 3/4.
You said your Uncle Sven was
3/4 saturated fat.
So beyond, I hadn't heard from him in a while.
He just asked his 3/4 saturated fat. Is that what you just
<That's me.
laughs> Did you hear him, Charles?
I didn't. I think I was talking.
His ass just said he's 3/4 saturated.
Oh, my goodness.
See what I'm saying?
3/4 saturated fat.
That's why my hair is so soft and my nails are soft.
You know, there were some folks defending Crispus Attucks the other day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you
really is. You're just going to change whatever so it sounds good. As we do our history.
Oh, you angry colored people.
You know, I hate that story. I really do. I hate them telling me how Chris is the first person to get shot of blame. I'm like, what the hell is that supposed to mean?
Khalid Muhammad.
Yeah. Oh, he wrote
it. Yeah, I like that. You said it.
Yeah, Khalid Muhammad. Yeah.
I'm like, why are you telling people that? Anyway. That I died for your revolution first. What the hell is that? Bullshit. I mean,
you were rewarded by your children working for the next 100 years.
Yeah, I'm like, what the hell? What the fuck? Well, nobody know I even
hate all that.
Yeah, that makes it sound like I'm stupid, you know? Like, yeah, look at y'all still liking it.
Praise white Jesus, you ingrate.
Hey. We delivered you from Africa, really?
Right, out of those jungles.
Didn't want to come, but, you know.
Oh, hot.
But you finally learned to appreciate the gift that we gave you.
Right.
You finally wise that we was right after all.
Exactly.
But what you were saying is, you know, you find that in that Sarah Hemings story.
Yeah.
I mean, like there was a real romantic relationship.
Yeah, Sally Hemings was.
Yeah.
Yes, Sally Hemings was one was 1/8 black. Her mother was half white. I'm familiar with that story. Now they tried to claim. I read from another book that was around the Kennedy's interracial intimacies, and they talked. And they gave the profile. She was a captive African. She was an alienated African, just like the people we talking about right now.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't. So those descendants that you made, they might say, "Oh yeah, we happen to be part of." Part of the Jefferson family, whatever, they don't identify with black folks.
Right.
They talk about black people, you know, bad. Dumb kind of people right there. They don't want nothing to do with us, except for when, you know, they need a favor.
But I think that's what Nana was saying about how they've turned that into like a love affair.
No, somebody else
mm-hmm.
did. Obama does it.
Mm-hmm.
He grew up in that,
mm-hmm.
in that European colonial household in Hawaii. He wasn't raised with his father. He was raised by a white man and a white woman. His grandparents are white. They all were bankers, laundering money
mm-hmm.
For these other European criminal crime cartels, and that's what they do. It's no coincidence, or it's not ironic that he would become a president, and then he would give a big banker bailout, because that's what his family is involved in. They in the bank business.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And he comes to America, whatever. He gets in on some kind of scholarship with some internet foreign student aid, because you know he ain't born here, whatever. But not that really matters. Flip all his records without his thing. And then he gets to Chicago, and he goes and joins Jeremiah Wright's church, who preaches the black liberation theology of Dr. James Combs of Union Theological Seminary. So he gets in there where they talk to very pro-black, you know, more biblically based freedom perspective on the theological framework. And that's where he goes, and he pitches his tent there and gets in the community, does all this community work, gets to be president, gets to the House of Representatives, then to the Senate, and then he gets and just forgets all about all black people. He says, "I ain't got nothing for you. Get the hell away from me. I don't even know y'all."
Mm-hmm.
Let y'all know this special handshake and these poshes I got. If you don't know these him, you ain't coming to the party.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't getting no favors. And that's it. And the rest of these people that's around those in the periphery, just you know, drooling over, just looking at that tan face and in that suit and behind that great ingrate seal of the United States, they are pleased because they see this as a new phase of
mm-hmm.
complicity in the expansion and refinement of white supremacy that Nana was just brought up. She's like, what are these people doing with this amnesia? Is identifying with history? That's what they're doing. They expanding white supremacy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they disassociate themselves with you. Some of them will go so far as to pretend to be deep with the African thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll immerse themselves, bathe themselves in black things, but have really no plans. You can look at the way they, you know, what they're doing, and you can see, ask yourself, how is what they're doing is good for African people or black people in any context, any situation, and see how it's working out and then work and as it's, you know, moving and progressing through time and space. And I think that's your own judgment everybody has to make. And yes, people have to judge. People say, "Oh, I shouldn't judge." Yeah, you should judge. That's up to you. That doesn't mean you're going to judge right. But you will judge.
Mm-hmm.
Your words will be judged by others as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a game, you know? No, so.
And you finished that dissertation with 4 more years.
4 more years.
There you go.
There you go. 4 more years. I'm going to bust out. Remember, I tell you I'm going to bust out with a video that we saw today. We was watching about the elections and stuff.
Yeah.
Saving that. Oh, I can't wait to put that out. I want to. Oh, yeah, that's going to be funny.
It's going to be hilarious.
Okay. All right, where were we now? Okay, we were... Okay. I think I know where we left off. Thanks for that question. No. Here we go. He said, the individual who has amnesia suffers distortion of and blindness to reality. individual who cuts himself off from his history is self-alienated. There's a whole part of himself that is completely shut off from his use. It is as if there were two parts. One part unknown, because it is unknown, doesn't mean that it is not effective. We have to devote energy to unknowing. We have to direct perception to unknowing. We have to say, let me turn my face so that I can't see. Let me not think about it. So the struggle to not know itself becomes a creator of behavior and personality structure. So the idea that not knowing one's history somehow permits one to escape it is a lie. It brings one under the domination of one of the more pernicious effects of that history and opens the personality up for self-alienation and self-destruction. A person who is suffering from amnesia lives a life based on negation, not on affirmation, not on growth and development, but lives life in such a way as to deny life and reality and to deny parts of his own personality and himself. Life then becomes a negation and is used to maintain a negation instead of life as it should be lived as affirmation, as growth, enhancement, and development. And people who live their lives as a negation live the lives that we see ourselves living today, going deeper and deeper into hell and going deeper into self-destruction as a people. History is real. It brings real, tangible results. When we wish to negate it and not integrate it, when we wish to negate it and not affirm it, then it negates us in the end. The negation wins out. The African person who lives in social amnesia, brought on by the projection of mythological Eurocentric history, lives a lie that is unintegrated and misunderstood. So why is our behavior so puzzling to us? We sometimes ask ourselves, why I didn't do that. I don't know what makes me do this. Here's behavior flowing out from our own mind and personality, and we don't know its sources. It means that we become a puzzlement to ourselves, the ones we think about that we should understand best. Often, other people can't understand us better than we can understand ourselves. Frequently, they have greater knowledge and of the history that made us into who we are than we do. And if we don't know our history, or if we've made our history unconscious and therefore placed it out of awareness, that unconscious history becomes a source of unconscious motivation. Then why we behave the way we do becomes a puzzle. We're confused by our own behavior. If we want to know why we behave the way we do, then we must know our history. The unconscious must be made conscious. Consequently, when the European makes us unconscious of our own history, we not only become unconscious of our history as knowledge, we become unconscious of the sources of our behavior as persons and as a people. And our own behavior becomes a mystery. Why do black folk act like that? We get discouraged. We give up. We ain't going to straighten them because we can't figure it out. When history is misperceived and we look to a white Jesus and pray to that white Jesus, then walk out and see the poverty, smell the stench, see the drugs, people holding babies up to shield themselves from bullets and all kinds of stuff. It's not difficult for us to step over a thin line that says, boy, we must have done something really terrible in the past for us to be suffering the way we do. As much as we pray to Jesus for us to be suffering the way we do, God must have cursed us, we surmise. Then we're ready for the old Ham mythology. We set ourselves up to introject inferiority into ourselves. We take it to our breast and pass it on to our children, and then we're done in. This is what happens when we don't know our history and we don't know the history of other people. There are some Negroes who seek to escape their history and identify by telling themselves, I don't see color. Well, do you think that means the world doesn't see you as color? A lot of people fail to understand that because they may choose not to see something in a certain way, that other people still may choose to do so. This assertion, I don't see color, doesn't change the way other people look at them. In fact, this perceptual misdirection sets them up to be manipulated. Almost every day we hear Negroes say that they have been manipulated and are being manipulated in some sort of way. In fact, they often say to justify them being manipulated and not confronting their reality, because they don't want to deal with the realistic situation that they live in. They want to deny the European's terroristic rule on Earth, deny his evil, deny his domination over them, and deny his destruction of the Earth and life itself. So they choose not to see color, so they don't see white for what it is. They use it to justify not knowing their own history and not knowing themselves because they don't see color, thereby maintaining the amnesia. When we get into social amnesia, into forgetting our history, we also forget to misinterpret the history and motives of others as well as our own motives. The way to know other people is to know oneself. The way to learn of our own creation is to, how we came to be what we are is getting to know ourselves. It's through getting to know the self intimately that we get to know the forces that shaped us as a self. Therefore, knowing the self becomes a knowledge of the world. A deep study of black history is the most profound way to learn about the psychology of Europeans and to understand the psychology that flows from their history. If we don't know ourselves, not only are we a puzzle to ourselves, other people are also a puzzle to us as well. We assume the wrong identity and identify ourselves with our enemies. If we don't know who we are, then we are whomever somebody else tells us we are.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's the end of that section. And it was very lengthy. It took up the whole program.
Mm-hmm.
Right, what you think? We'll take a quick break. And we'll come back, and we probably can do one more section. We'll come back, and we'll do Changing Our Name. And that's Dr. Wilson. He'll explore the idea of changing a name, naming ourselves, and taking control over self-identification. All right, and we'll be back after a few messages.
Welcome to AfricanImpressions.com. African Impressions is a black-owned business that offers products made by the global African community. African Impressions offers the finest in African-made jewelry, craft, clothing, and so much more. As the renaissance of the African community rapidly approaches, you need to add acquiring products crafted by members of the global African family to your repertoire of activities. We must rediscover more of our ancient cultural habits, which we struggle to regain, and incorporate them into our daily lives. Support African craftsmen and women by shopping at AfricanImpressions.com today. Hope to see you there.
Greetings. I'm Dr. Wilbert Smith, author and producer. And on Thursday, July 12th at 10 a.m., I will be joining African Conversations with host Charles Williams on the African Knowledge Network to discuss Hole in the Head, A Life Revealed. It's an incredible story and film that tells the extraordinary life story of Vertus Hardeman. So again, on Thursday, July 12th at 10 a.m., make sure you join me on African Conversations on Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, I'm Eric Teamer, host of Common Sense Conversations. Join me every Tuesday and Friday when I put common sense where it ain't so common. That's Common Sense Conversations, every Tuesday and Friday, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central, 3:30 Pacific. Common Sense Conversations on BlogTalkRadio.com.
listen in to African Conversations on the African Knowledge Network, where we will converse with researchers about matters significant to the African diaspora community. Join us on Facebook on the African Conversations community page. Enjoy the dialogue on African Conversations on blogtalkradio.com.
According to Henry David Thoreau, a man is rich in proportion to the number of things that he can afford to let alone. With that in mind, we find our people locked in a permanent cycle of poverty, especially those who mistakenly believe that they somehow have arrived, only a paycheck from foreclosure. Although we find black incomes at an all-time high, we still lack wealth, and we also lack the understanding of the purpose of wealth, which is safety, growth, and security. But it's not hard to turn this around. It will first require us to take a look at the bigger picture, and also it will require us to stop flossing. We have to understand that that $10 that we waste every day equals $300 a month. The same $300 that you find yourself missing every month. The same $300 required for you to invest into your family, into your community, and into your nation. Please join us on Facebook, African Money.
African Knowledge Beyond the Book airs every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. We are a literary society dedicated to the study of African-based psychoanalytical texts. We hope you will join us as we delve into the inner working of our African consciousness. African Knowledge Beyond the Book, every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com.
Of the first lecture entitled The Consequences of Historical Amnesia. Now we're getting ready to explore the section in this lecture on changing our name. And the call-in number is area code 323-580-5707, and we're on page 38 of the text. Okay, here it is. We don't have time to talk about Jesse Jackson and his African-American campaign and the New York Times, which feels that we are not African-American until the New York Times says we are African-American. I want to read this excerpt from January 31st, 1989, the New York Times. And I quote, "A movement led by Jesse Jackson
which is interested in that is a total misinterpretation and distortion of history right there, to call black African Americans has met with both rousing approval and deep-seated skepticism in a debate that is coming to symbolize the role and history of blacks in this country, end quote. Even these people recognize that a name is connected to social role. A name is not just something you call people, but a name a people are called signifies their role. Therefore, a change of name represents the people's attempt to change their role and position in the world. Some Negroes think that to change our name is just some foolish game we're playing. It's not about that. Even other people recognize that. He quotes, the change of name, if it comes, will be deeply felt. And if what it implies becomes a true part of African American personality, represents fundamental changes in this world, end quote. It is not a game we're playing here. Identity is very important, as is the idea that black people would dare to name themselves. Whites recognize this as an incursion on their power of naming and an incursion on their power of domination. History is what creates a shared identity in a people. It is based on that shared identity that they act collectively. To take away a people's history, to degrade their history, is to degrade their sense of shared identity, is to remove the basis upon which they must behave collectively and reach their goals collectively. That's why the history is rewritten and why people get alarmed about it. When we suffer from social amnesia, we forget the debt we owe to past and future generations. When we then misinterpret our accomplishments as solely our own individual achievements. I remind my college student audiences that you're not here in this college just because you're smart, because you come from the right family, because you scored high on the SATs and all that other stuff. Blacks have scored high on ACTs since the beginning of time. We've had good families and the right families from the beginning. We had 4.0 students from the beginning. We had all of that, and we were still kept out of the university. So you're not here because of your own personal achievement. You're here because people who didn't score anything put their bodies on and their lives on the line to see that you got here. And you owe them something for that. If this institution decides to put you out, it would be these same people who will be up there to see that you get there, getting here again. Some of you want to forget that history and then claim you owe them nothing when you make your couple of little bucks in front of the TV camera or some other place. Then not only do you forget them, you forget the ones coming after you, and you don't make sure that they can also get in and their privileges are also maintained. You want to act like revolution is something that's temporary and not permanent. It is permanent. You forget your history and forget who you are and lose your obligation to the past, to those who made your success possible, and do not fulfill your obligation to those for those to come, some of whom will be your own sons and daughters. When we suffer from social amnesia, we identify with abstractions. I'm not black. I'm not African. I'm a human being. I'm an American. Sterile, abstract identity. The closer we get to it, the less we see of it, and the more we recognize that it has no meaning. What is that? Who is that? What does that stand for? What does it mean? It's empty, and people who identify themselves with these abstractions are also empty and experience their lives as empty, as people who have no feelings. They identify with abstractions so as to escape feelings. Therefore, we see them as detached and cut off from themselves, as persons as well as from their people. In fact, they use their abstract identity to escape their responsibilities to their own people and to escape the pain and struggle that happens today to be a part of our situation. I love the challenge of being African in today's world. It's wonderful. I love digging in my heels against the impossible odds of being black in America. What greater challenge would we have in life today than to be African? What greater testament to our heroism than to overcome the problems that face us today? What greater opportunity can we have to transform ourselves and transform the world in the process? Why would we wish to escape this kind of challenge? It's too wonderful, too magnificent. We should eat this kind of talent for breakfast. When we become socially amnesiatic, we forget our location in time and space because our history is about locating oneself in time and space. History is a grid, a set of coordinates that permit the individual to locate himself in reference to other points in the world. History is a mathematical concept. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a geometrical concept. It locates and positions one relative to other things. That's the end of that portion of the lecture. How much time do we have left, Jolivet?
As long as you want.
Okay. Well, let me see. I think I'm gonna, since we just introduced time, we'll do one more session on history and the manipulation of time. So that's page 41. We'll go from 41 to 43, and we'll wrap it up there, and we'll pick up next week on history and wealth creation. So we'll do this one session on page, starting at 41.
Okay.
All right. When one is shorn of one's past and does not see the direction of one's future and is very uncertain of present, then one cannot tell from whence one comes, where one is going, where one is, and suffers as a result. Let me quickly read the context of history as a time dimension from a little piece done in the Omni magazine, dated February 1984. It's called Timeless Minds. It reads, quote, When I wake you, the past will be gone. Dr. Bernard Aronson of the New Jersey Neuropsychiatric Institute told a deeply hypnotized college student. When the post-hypnotic suggestion took hold, the student became drowsy and infantile, losing both memory and powers of speech. The hypnotist had given the student a post-hypnotic suggestion. When I wake you, the past will be gone. He then woke the student. The student reported how he felt. He exhibited infantile behavior, losing both memory and the powers of speech. Later, reported a vague sense of meaninglessness. Why am I here? What is my purpose? What is the meaning of life? Those kinds of querying and issues. A loss of history, a loss of past was created within the student. The young man without a past was one of 10 college students who took part in an unusual experiment with psychological time walk. So there was a manipulation of time. A manipulation of an individual's past is a manipulation of his time dimension. A warping of his time which warps his perception, warps his experience and perception of himself. People who play with our history are playing with our sense of time, playing with our sense of place, and who we are and what we're about. So is history just an elective? No, ladies and gentlemen. Here's another quote. He says, Aronson gave some subjects post-hypnotic suggestions that eliminate their past, present, or future. He gave others a vastly expanded past, present, or future. The consequences were profound. With no future, the people feel a loss of identity and a euphoric, mystical sensation, free of both anxiety and motivation. One student found himself in a boundless, imminent present. Expanding the future, on the other hand, canceled all fears of death and induced serenity, contemplation, and a feeling of self-fulfillment. Being robbed of a past brought on a semi-infantile, torpid state, and the student with a dilated past became egocentric and inhibited. Wow. All right, end of that quote, he said, and he goes on. Canceling the present was the most disturbing, however. One subject turned catatonic. Others became severely depressed and almost schizophrenic. Stopping subjective time altogether produced an eerie sensation of death. The world moves on, but I don't, one student observed. Aronson's conclusion? Life must carry some sense of direction from past to present or from present to future to seem worth living. People given a present shorn of a past and future become preoccupied with death and behave like schizophrenics. What are we saying here? The hypnotist, by manipulating the man's attitude toward his past, manipulated his consciousness, real capabilities and abilities. He wasn't in a state of illusion. He had memory problems. He had problems getting meaning out of life. He lost his sense of purpose in life. He became lethargic, drowsy, and sleepy. People who manipulate the past and present manipulate one's mentality, sanity, contact with reality, and the ability to deal with reality. In other words, the manipulation of history creates real effects in the individual's personality. Our history not being taught to us correctly ensures that our potential will be forever undeveloped as a people and that we cannot challenge those who rule over us. Intellectual structures and powers are undeveloped when we suffer from amnesia. They are restricted and alienated. Some of my black students say, "Hey, I know nothing about black history, but I know math. I know computer science. I know this, I know that." So apparently it didn't do me much harm. Oh no, don't deceive yourself. Being cut off from your past only means that you have gained knowledge of the at the cost of being alienated. You have gained an alienated knowledge. Alienated knowledge can only be used in the interest of aliens. Look at who you work for. Once you know computer science, you don't know your history. That's one of the unwritten rules. They will teach you math and science and so forth to the degree that you forget what and who you are, your history, and forget your connectedness with your people. Because it's only when you are unconnected that you can be of use to aliens. You cannot use alienated knowledge for yourself. Knowledge must be connected and contained in a historical structure, in a cultural structure, if it is to work for a particular people. That's why you can't get degrees in business administration and build no businesses. You can be CEO of Xerox, yet you won't build your own. That's the end of that section. Anybody have anything to say about that portion on history and the manipulation of time?
Oh, you know, while you were talking, it was reminding me of something, a conversation I had with somebody a while back. We were standing and we were watching some Mexican folks stand on the corner and they were waiting for, you know, day work. Right. And somebody was making a wisecrack about it. Somebody, you know, they're my age, and I said, well, my mother used to do that. My mother used to stand on the corner. There was a corner in Harlem where they used to stand there waiting for a day where somebody come by and you could wash Miss Essie's, you know, laundry. How old are you? And I said, the same age you are. You know, your mother did that too. But you don't remember that, you know. And so the person talks about living in the past. And I said, you just want to erase that, the fact that that ever happened. It takes something away from you when you erase things like that, you know.
Right.
We're so desperate to get away from, you know, these types of things and say that never happened. That's a part of our life, a part of our history, you know. And there's a lot of things like that where we want to sit and try to ignore it and pretend that this never happened, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody I know, their mother was some professional, and I'm like, that's not the case. If your mother was a professional, then what was all that fighting for?
Right. Or if their mother was a professional, let's go one generation before that.
Mm-hmm.
We just keep going.
Yeah.
We're going to find that relative that was washing, you know, or taking care of some white person. You know what I mean? So every black, you know, our experience here is survive.
Yeah.
And so, and even as a so-called professional, it's still serving white supremacy.
Exactly.
Read and write. You got a degree from some black institution in the early, late 1800s or whatever, early 20th century. They serving white folks. Lynching is abound, and it could happen to any one of our ancestors just as it could someone who couldn't read and write. So it made no difference. But these people act like you're saying, like, you know, they, even like I'm not talking about these people who are not identifying with the total black experience, the total African captive experience, kind of separate. Oh, well, I got to do with that. My relatives didn't do this or that kind of work. Yes, they did.
Mm-hmm.
know what I'm saying? We were being molested continuously during our captivity here. And they don't like to talk about it in terms of captivity. Every time I say captivity in an article, everybody look like I just said a dirty word.
Mm-hmm.
I just brought up some pornographic act that, you know, captivity. That's right. You in captivity. You are in a living museum.
Yeah.
They make ghettos. They put you in them and study you. Write papers, you know, do all kinds of weird experiments, you know, put implants in you, you know, hypnotize you like the man just said they did to do it at some university. You think they're not doing this at black schools, military academies, hospitals, prisons, you know, where they have black people who can't, African people who can't move, navigate, and are held captive somewhere. I mean, more captive than we are now, but they are in restricted locomotion.
Mm-hmm.
And they got, like, armies of psychologists rubbing their hands together, itching to do all kinds of savage tests and experiments on them. You know? That's the reality that we're living in. But everybody wants to die. You get people that come out of the prisons, you ask them to talk about the horrors that they've seen, and they don't want to talk about it because they're trying to forget.
Mm-hmm. They're trying to move on.
They're trying to, quote, unquote, move on. I ain't trying to think about it. Hello, you need to think about it, because if you think about it, you're going to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yeah, we can put an end to this if we will remember our past. Not only our immediate past, but our distant past. We need to totally identify with the complete spectrum of our history.
Hmm.
All of it. That's right.
Yeah.
How many stories do we read in recent history where somebody grabbed some child and they held them for the last 10 years in the basement and doing all kinds of things? That child didn't escape and then asked that person for a job after they were held captive, which is pretty much what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We want to forget about the abuse in that basement.
Mm-hmm.
and everything that went along with it, we just want to act like it never happened, and I'm just going to go ahead and cut this kidnapper's grass and mow the lawn every morning.
Classic Stockholm syndrome.
Right, and we are, and you know what? They're okay now. The kidnapper gonna let me marry his psychopathic daughter now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, take him in this sociopath, psychopathic, rapist, child molesting, animal raping daughter.
Cause she's hot.
She's hot. Yeah, she sure is, isn't she? Ready for hell, man.
Y'all are so bitter.
Yeah, we need to get on with it, cause this is not going to help.
Yeah. And now there's this new thing. Now, I think it's just they own this new attack now. All these amnesiac, alienated Negroes. They're on the warpath now. They think they got something. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I don't know what that's all about. I don't know where they're getting all swole. Shit. I don't know people letting them even stand up like that.
Yeah.
You know? Because they're not, what I see on the threads is they're not getting enough resistance to my satisfaction.
No, not at all. Not at all.
But they can come on now, say all that, and, I mean, I don't even know how they survive, how they get in the inbox with get the hell out of here and getting unfriended. You know, for having been reported for saying such thing, you know. But evidently, what we've been talking about, the trends in people, everybody going back to sleep, I see it happening right before our eyes.
Uh-huh.
We've been on this particular social network medium for 2.5 years, roughly, and people are already going back into going back to sleep. We watching it happen.
All it takes is a raise.
They not reading.
Ooh,
they studying.
Ooh,
I don't even know what they got. They got a raise? What they got paid with?
American dollars. I just got a raise. I'm not all black power and all that.
But then the currency got devalued. So then what? Oh, they don't know about
that.
You make this so complicated. I make it so complicated, huh? Maybe they did. Well, I guess so. I guess if they don't know that.
And you resemble a hater.
Well, yeah, everybody hates something. Come on. You can't love everything.
I can. I love everything. And if you love everything, you get love back.
Do you feel all that love you're talking about?
Yes, I love everybody.
You know what that reminds me of?
Understand,
you know,
if we think positive, you know, all of this will go away. I'm gonna go to bed. I'm gonna pray tonight that all of this, you know, goes away. I'm gonna be positive, and I'm gonna trust. Cause see, people are people. I don't see color.
Hey, tell about the I don't know.
Officer O'Malley does.
Person I know.
Nervous.
What you should do, see, while you're worried about the police, if you just, somebody wrote on, I can't make this up, he said that if you just stay above reproach, you don't have to worry about police brutality.
Really?
I agree with him.
That is crazy as hell.
I stay above reproach, and I know, you know, right always win out.
They got to put the black man on trial. You got to be, what the hell is above reproach? So why you just, it's your fault you got hit in the head or shot to death, whatever. You wasn't above reproach.
You were in the wrong place at the wrong time, black man.
That's right. You know what? You shouldn't have been in front of my bullets.
Exactly.
The only thing above is your hands above your head.
If I shot you, you just weren't, you know, I wasn't feeling safe.
Try it. And you know what? Y'all are so negative. I just every week.
I have a black friend that's not very black, and that black friend told me they wanted to restore my faith in humanity.
Sure did.
Told me that I had lost faith
in humanity. Yep.
I said just because I'm identifying the European as the criminal monster that he is in the world. And I lost faith in him. And so those people are human, are the poster persons for humanity now.
For all things human.
And then I was like, that is just, I couldn't believe it. Then I showed him a video. Remember that video they had with that black, that cake with the black person by there was eating it?
Mm-hmm.
And I showed them that, and they were so sad. They were sad.
No, actually, they said they couldn't read the article and they couldn't look at it.
They said they couldn't look at it, but they got kind of quiet because they couldn't make a case that they wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm glad they didn't try to make no excuse, but I had to commend them for that because they seem to be overcoming that objection, you know. They'll say that's over there and, you know, whatever. But that's yeah. We got black folks running around here trying to tell us we need to overlook that.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And they trying to win us over.
Well, they're winning with me anyway. I'm really seeing the light, the white light.
White?
What are we up to this year? About 6,000 isolated incidents of police brutality.
Oh, that makes my head hurt. It was 6,752
isolated incidents.
Isolated incidents of police brutality.
Bad apple.
It's a bad apple. And you cannot blame that on all of them. Stop it.
It's a bushel of bad apples.
Dude, that's right. It's a bad orchid.
You need to start counting the good apples.
You just say orchid. Stop it.
It's a bad apple. You need to burn the whole field down.
This is generally the part where we say, let's go.
It is, man.
Y'all are through.
Bad orchids, all the whole field, all the trees need to be cut down and set on fire.
And
late
a farmer.
At night.
Oh, this negativity. I'm going to just have to stop coming because y'all don't know how to act.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm rising above the hate.
That's right. We have to be positive.
That's right.
We don't think positive. Nothing positive is going to happen if it doesn't start with us. Positivity
right.
starts with you.
Why does positivity have to be synonymous with ignoring the duty? Why do they say that? Like to do your duty to your ancestors and your descendants is negative, and to serve your oppressor is positive.
From what I was told on a conversation that I was having with a gentleman regarding melanin actually making you pleasant-minded so that you accept your fate, whether it's good or bad. So it's, the power of melanin gives us that docile nature that, we just, and so I'm saying that we need to parlay this power of melanin, into what...
That's
I can't even get it out.
That's cute. That's cute. You need to turn.
You have a hell of a melanin problem, apparently.
Hey, I know, Brother Min, you have a copy of a Developmental Psychology of the Black Child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Now you remember in the chapter on socialization of the black child. Dr. Wilson discusses the locus of control. And in that section on page 167, he discusses where we have an internal or external locus of control. And he summarized that most black people have an idea that we are just passive. And we allow external forces to just act upon us. And we just say that's just how it is.
We just pray about
it. Right.
Right.
That's
our melanin, the gift of melanin.
The gift of melanin. And so what it is, that's just a black way of doing it. He talks about it in that section, in that chapter, Socialization of Black Child. See, that's just the way most black people are socialized, to just submit.
Correct.
To the external forces. And when you start talking about having an internal locus of control, meaning, no, I'm going to exert my power on my environment, and they look at you like, what the hell are you talking about?
Exactly.
You know, it's funny you said that, because I have Facebook on, and I had on my page a picture of a Ukrainian group of protesters, and this group of protesters was confronted by the police, and they whipped out pepper spray and pepper sprayed the police.
That's right.
You know?
Goddamn right.
and the response by somebody else was, we couldn't get away with something like that.
Yeah.
They're just going to call for backup anyway.
I don't care.
You know,
they do call backup.
They're going to beat you down whether they call for backup or whether they don't call for backup.
Right.
We have a caller in 314. Welcome to Beyond the Book Club. How are you this evening?
Look, I was listening to your conversation. This is Pianchi, but I was doing some multitasking.
Hey.
And you've been talking about Amos Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
But I have all the Amos Wilson books and his videos that was taken, decades ago. But one of the best works that Amos Wilson done that we should be following is his masterpiece, Blueprint for Black Power.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In particular, chapter 14. Now, I'm going to say something, and some people don't agree with this, but racism is not the problem of black people in America today. And if you just look around, as I had mentioned in the chat room, you have African immigrants as black as Wesley Snipes, who come here in the hundreds of thousands. And their household earnings is greater than that of African Americans. And of course, the education too is probably four times, even greater than whites. And somebody had mentioned some areas like Suffolk and Essex County. In those particular areas, African immigrants do out-earn whites. So you have to ask your question, what is it that they're doing that we're not doing, you know, to a great extent? So, now Amos Wilson put out a very good masterpiece in that particular book. Chapter 14 is something that has a lot of information, a lot of comparison. What's in there is true when it talks about the Koreans. And, you know, South Korea, about 30 years ago, was actually worse than blacks in America were. And their annual income was less than that of the country of Ghana, West Africa, less than $350 a year. Their schools were so deplorable. In a private school, the average classroom size was about 60. In a public school, it was about 90 per classroom, whereas in Ghana, it was 30 and 40. So a lot of information that we should follow and pay attention. And now I see now is the best time for blacks in America to start making their economic moves than I've seen in a long, long time. If not, the people that we're going to be complaining about is no longer going to be whites, because white is a household income has dropped down by three levels. Asians at top, white Hispanics is second, and you know, white Americans is third. We're going to be marching against Asians and you know, these other ethnic groups, because they are doing some things, especially the Chinese.
Well, what is your point?
What is my point? Oh, about yeah. Amos Wilson, his book, Blueprint from Black Power.
Yeah, I mean, okay. So what is your point?
I was making comment on what a marvelous piece
I
of
heard your comment. So I heard the comment. So what is your point?
That was my point, yes. I mean, if you read Amos Wilson's
I've read Amos Wilson. So what point are you making?
Well, I wasn't just talking to you, young lady. I was talking to whoever was listening also.
All right, so I'm asking you a question. What point are you making, sir?
Well, you know, another point, too. I heard you talking about history also. And, you know, and I made a comment in the chat room that we start in the middle of the book. When we start in studying history as our experiences in slavery and so forth, but we never go back during those period of times. I heard one of the callers make in reference to when, mm-hmm. you know, black people did control the world militarily and trade, and those systems that they imposed should be studied. If we study in American history, ask ourselves, why is it that Thomas Jefferson, the first Secretary of State and also the third President of the United States, why was he an egalitarian and against the wishes of Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Adams, and they're wanting to instill free trade?
Right.
The South didn't want free trade. The North wanted free trade. The North, in order to accomplish free trade, they had to impose tariffs on imported goods, but the South didn't like that, because the South was in an agrarian industry, where the North were trying to industrialize. So as far as those are something to study.
I have a question. Wasn't Alexander Hamilton in favor of central banks?
Alexander Hamilton was in Jefferson was totally against bankers.
Okay.
And another thing, those founding fathers were not Christians. Jefferson, Washington never did mention God. He always said province. And even on their deathbed, they had people there to witness him die to make sure that they didn't call upon no Jesus or anything.
Right.
But there's a lot to be learned, you know, studying those details of their thinking and the reason why come they did what they did.
I think Alexander Hamilton was Secretary of Treasury, and I think he may have been, you know, dubious and somehow underhandedly in favor of the banking interest. I understand something that he has a popular history by him.
Yeah, right? He was in favor of the new mode of that this country was going into at that particular time. You know, Alexander Hamilton got killed in a duel with Aaron Burr.
Right. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, but back to your point, you were saying that racism wasn't the biggest problem for black people, and
I said it's not. Racism
not
is
the
not
biggest
problem.
Right.
Like
not. Right. As I said, yeah. What do you say? Not
black
the biggest problem.
Today,
and then you use the case study of the people from Africa coming over here into America, and they're making more money. They're more industrious than many of the white people here. And you talk about how the Koreans overcame much of their South Koreans, that is. Overcame the problem, but we do know the South Koreans are getting a lot of help from these from the West, and we do know Ghana is working real closely with the European West interests as well.
Well, they also work close with the Chinese too. They not matter of fact, I'm marrying a Ghana lady this fall, but they work very close. They work very close with the they working very close with Chinese. Americans are losing out all over the place.
And the Chinese are working really closely with the UN. Matter of fact, they're a favored nation. I think they're considered a model nation by the UN. And something you want to say, Jonathan?
Well, I wanted to know, he said that the Africans coming over is an indication that there isn't racism in this country. So then am I supposed to understand that? Well, what is it? Let me just ask this. What is it that they're coming over? What is their magic? What are they doing differently that perhaps we could begin to do so that we can see, how we can get out of this situation that obviously is not colored by racism?
Well, one of the things that they do, they qualify for things that black Americans don't qualify for.
Okay.
Especially along the lines of education.
Okay. So why don't we qualify for, if we're both black and there is no racism, why do they qualify and we don't?
Well, black Americans have such a high dependence on government for some reason. Well, I understand why, but I don't know why come they still dwell in that.
And
plus, you got leaders.
They're getting some kind of government favors in that.
If they're
getting some kind of government favors, they qualify for these things. I know whether they be they are government favors. They're supposedly from a private bank. You know, banks really, work with very close with the government.
So why do they qualify and I don't?
Right.
Well, because they're educated for these positions. They have the highest education attainment than any other immigrant group, even more so than Asians do.
Okay. The answer to racism is education.
Education, yeah, he's saying education because I know a lot of black college graduates with undergraduate and graduate degrees, and they're not obviously being approved or directed toward these programs to which you are obviously privy to. So, we need to hear more about this. Please continue, sir.
Yeah, and another thing, see, Africans target, I know 10 pharmacists, and
mm-hmm.
9 of them are Nigerians. And they target these, just like the Asians do. Asians target the money-making ventures here in the United States. Asians control the import-export. The goods that they manufacture has to pass through an Asian broker agent in order for it to enter the United States, so they control that. And then they control the warehousing and the distribution of their products. Their businesses outperform, they don't outperform whites, but they come in a very well. Asian women's businesses outperform white women's businesses. I think the Asian woman's businesses gross about $160,000 a year, whereas the black American female business gross about $37,000 a year. So we have to start looking at things a whole lot different than what we do. 87% of black businesses gross less than $50,000 a year. Blacks have 1.9 million businesses, and over a million of them don't hire nobody at all.
Right. So what you're saying, basically, there's a lot of social organization economic organization, rather, to their framework. And that's what we were talking about, racism in our society, is that we're culturally conditioned through, and by looking at our history, you and anyone else is able to see how we do the things that we do and why we do the things that we do, that we are culturally discouraged and made mentally ill so that we can't function in a way that is beneficial to our own society. All those ideas you were saying, like, you know, organizing, setting up and having these brokers and make things go through. Yeah, we used to have more of that here, but we have less of it because we were not true to ourselves. You got to serve your own interests. And we black people, I'm like Steve Coakley said this one time. He said, in the black community, he said, there are no consequences for treason. So a black person.
Right.
Absolutely. And you know what? From the chat room, you have some interesting comments. Kometu said that the education system itself is racist.
Yes, it is racist.
His question was, does that mean, Priyanka, what you were saying, does that mean that the Africans from the continent are ultimate sellouts?
Well, no, they're not sellouts. They approach education from a whole different perspective than we do here. And we control, I mean, you got black superintendents, teachers, principals in these public schools where black children are at. They're the ones.
They don't throw no curriculum. They're told.
Well, no, yes, they do, because the control of curriculum is based on the local concerns. But black,
it should be.
Listen to the discussion. The discussion about education on talk shows is that when are they going to improve education? When are they going to do this? If they depend on, they always ask them when somebody else is going to do these things, but they
right.
have a policy.
Well, I'm going to see who controls.
Whites are never going to give your children the things that they need to have in order
well,
to
that's interesting. If the white people will never give it, and that's who is passing it down and customarily who the black people turn to for the answers, then, again, why is there no racism?
No, I said the racism is not a problem today. Our problem today is
oh, so it is a problem, but it's not a big problem.
Well, right. Well, we're finding it at the root cause of everything.
Today racism has evolved into a whole different paradigm. Today is based on, it's more social. When I was coming up, it was economic because there was no whites in our community. And we had everything we needed to have a sustainable, we just didn't have the economics.
Mm-hmm.
But today is about getting along. When you hear about schools in Georgia that want to have all-white proms, black folks get all upset over that. Well, them children have a right to have an all-white prom if they want to. That's their business.
Right. I mean, I would be in support of it, but the problem is that we live in the age post-integration, and black people are addicted to trying to integrate with white people now. And now white folks are pulling back because the mission is complete. They've already disorganized and destroyed our social organization. They just which was racist to inflict the horrors that they did on us, and then we stayed together and we survived, made our own economic system. In some cases, they said your community didn't have economic base. Some communities did have economic strength, and what they did, they broke it. They paid people to advocate. Matter of fact, I talked to an activist from the 70s. About 2-3 years ago, my wife remembers, I told her about this story. She was with me. This guy, he was paid a lot of political favors to integrate into a white public school back in the day. And he told me, he said it was the worst thing that happened to black people.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is an executive with the Department of Natural Resources, State of Louisiana. I ain't gonna mention his name. He ain't hard to find, but ain't that many of them. Anyway,
well, that's true. What he said, he's absolutely true.
I know him. Yeah. I know his family and whatnot. And
you
then he turns around and he said, "Yeah, I did this stuff, and I got a lot of doors were opened for me for that work." You see what I'm saying? So, but nothing happened because, like I was saying with Coach Steve Coakley, black people don't really know
I think at the conscious level, I think the unconscious level, we know the stuff, you know, is fishy and ain't all good, but we're willing to buy into any kind of lie that people tell us in order to go along because it seems to be the easy path because it's all nice and been manicured and laid out for us to follow, and we don't want to object.
And we don't believe in our abilities to truly, you know, manifest what it is that we need to do as a community. We don't believe that we have
the right
or the capability to do it. You have a caller in the 720. You're live. Welcome to the show.
How you doing?
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment on what Brother Pianchi is saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think the comments are incomplete. I mean, there's some accuracy to some of what he's saying, but the reality is that the Black American population is more educated than all of the Africans on the continent, and we've had access to the education system longer.
Mm-hmm.
And our numbers are greater in this country of immigrants that have moved here, so I don't think that's totally accurate.
You know, I think when you talk about the blueprint, Amos points out the differences between the different ethnic groups, the Koreans, the Chinese, and what they're doing, but they're doing it based off of a racial a racial strength. They're not doing it in the name of being American. They're doing it in the name of being Korean and Chinese and working together. Our folks, even the Africans, are doing it in the name of what we call being Mr. Charlie approved. That same thing where they're seeking approval at all times. They come in and then they blend. The goal is not to strengthen African people as a whole. When you have a lot of immigrants come from Africa, that's not their concern. Their concern is themselves. And there's
true.
A problem like that between Africans and with African Americans. To clarify, I said
African immigrants have more educational attainment than any other immigrant, including that of American-born Black people. And that is,
I don't agree.
You know,
that education is not relevant.
The education that they have, it serves their purpose. It serves white supremacy. I don't even get what you even talk about. I'm totally confused.
Well, if you look at their numbers on your Ivy League, look at their numbers on the Ivy League colleges. They make up 40% of the Black population on Ivy League colleges. Matter of fact,
And how is it that Black folks have benefited from that?
How is it that Black folks benefited?
How is it that Black people have benefited from these 40% of African immigrants who have these degrees?
No, I didn't say. I said that's what. When you look at your Ivy League colleges, your Yale, your Harvard's, and your
So what benefit have we gotten from that?
Well, they take advantage of the affirmative action that was meant for Black Americans, but Black Americans don't qualify for it.
Is that the answer?
Pardon me?
How does it benefit Black people as a whole by those Africans going to Ivy League colleges? I have an older brother who went to an Ivy League college. He's not concerned with African people as a whole. That's what the training is at the Ivy League.
Amos Wilson actually says that. So I'm like, I'm trying to figure out.
He says that in his book. Yeah.
No, he says that.
And it doesn't have any benefit to.
You had something to say.
The other issue is 60% of the people who are Black in the colleges are still us from America. So the stats are still off. That we're still the majority of the Black people getting the education. And in the hometown I grew up in, Joliet, Illinois. The last time I was there, I did a research on the Black entrepreneurial businesses from the early 1900s up into the present. And we had a very strong presence of Black educated people, insurance brokers, real estate people, and a whole bunch of people, even under the conditions of racism. So if you look at our history in this country, at least the parts that they tell us about, we still have the other immigrants beat. So I don't agree with you.
Yeah, when you look, Amos Wilson himself put that in Blueprint on Black Power. He talks about the African immigrant. He talked about the Afghan immigrants. He talked about the career. So you're saying that what he put in there is not true?
Well, he didn't say what he's, you said.
What he has said time again is that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. If we are not reaping the benefits of this, what is it that we're getting out of the deal?
Well, here's where it matters. It matters is that if you was a star of business, your business should be international rather than just neighborhood businesses. I've said this before.
Our business needs to be international. When the Koreans come over here and they start up, they have a home base, they have a homeland that they send their money to. They take care of their own. The Black Americans here, we don't consider Africa to be our home base. That's the mindset that we need to get in, that we need to be taking care of our own. We spend more than anybody else, and yet none of our Black businesses reap the benefits of how we spend our money. The Asians do, the Arabians do, everyone else benefits from our dollar. So that's what Amos Wilson is getting at, is that we need to benefit from those dollars. You're telling me about these African immigrants with all this education, and yet they come over here and they act like everybody else.
The Ghanaians and the Nigerians and other Africans who seem to be having a higher education rate, which I don't agree with.
What is meant by higher education when your own African people are not benefiting from it? That is stupid. That's what Amos Wilson even said.
I'm just saying,
we have all this paperwork, and what? And what?
And nothing. Nothing. But the Africans that do come over here, they come over here with ties to their homeland, and this is why the Asians are in bed with them. This is why the Europeans put them on the most favored nation status, because they have gold and diamonds and resources that they're angling at getting from them. So it still ain't a good deal.
Well, here's the point. You have Black Americans that's doing business.
They debase us to the point that we don't have any resources to actually be of benefit to them other than labor. Whereas the other Africans still have land and still have mines and still have oil. And so, you know, the argument is weak.
Excuse me, Bianca, but the point we need to get is that those people that in Africa, they do have some control over the resources. Though those Africans are working as puppet agents of many European colonial powers or governments.
Exactly.
And here in the United States, we've been cut off from our ancestry. We've been cut off from our inheritance, actually. We could create a new inheritance and new power, but we don't have the socialization, the programming to do it. And every time we've created some power and something, we have always allowed Svengalis and traitors and Pied Pipers to come along, do us harm, and we don't punish, because we believe that the European is the only one that has the right to judge and carry out punishments. And that's where unrest was a very critical area that we must develop, is we have to develop a law, a legal code, a way that
And
Neely Fuller talked about it. He called it the law of compensation. And we should have a law of compensation, and we should not tolerate that. Somebody go out and create a secret society like Sigma Pi Phi, and they're going to work to advance the cause of white supremacy. We should, and other groups that already exist, we should not tolerate their existence.
You mentioned something about inheritance.
I've been told by the Europeans. The secret societies that we do belong to, Kappa, Alpha, all those things are controlled by the Europeans.
Mentioned something about,
inheritance. Yes,
I did. The Kappa Alpha fraternities here is not controlled by no European. They controlled by Black teachers.
That's not true.
They are controlled by all of them. They are the guardians, the Boule. They are under, you know, the Magnificent Nine and all that bull.
that stuff.
They are the guardians, and they do work for the Caucasians. They do not work
and
in our
behavior.
What Pianki has done to understand, they call it cultural hegemony. They are a buffer class.
Exactly.
They are blood related to the European slave magnates. And
exactly.
I mean, when I say the magnates, these are people who use we call them corporate executives nowadays. And back then they were called slave masters. They are the sons and daughters of these people who they were given land and lots of money to carry out white supremacy laws, because these people were slave owners. I'm telling you, Louisiana was a state that had the most black slave owners than any other state in the Union.
Mm-hmm.
They owned trafficked in Africans. A lot of people don't talk about
that. Yeah, but here's the point. In Mississippi, blacks control 18 counties there on either side of the Mississippi River in West Mississippi.
Right.
Why
come
you know?
How many counties are in Mississippi?
I don't know.
How many counties are in Mississippi?
I don't know how many counts. I know how many blacks, how many the blacks make the majority of.
What you actually mean is that blacks administer 18 counties.
Right.
And
minimum
in service.
Well,
of
they have majority. They had a majority of population in those 18 counties.
Okay.
But,
and no power.
And they administer. They didn't control anything. Trust me on this. They didn't control anything.
What is the consequence of those counties? What
they
the
were doing the work
of
somebody
counties?
Else. They didn't control anything.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because if we had control. Brother Pianki, we would be able to control trade from the Caribbean to those 18 counties. We'd be able to have our own trade going. We have ships coming in, and we would be conducting trade from the Caribbean, which would trade become from Caribbean to South America. We would have black international trade going on with a major hub in Mississippi. We come to the Mississippi River, but we don't control that because we don't have the military power, or we haven't developed the guile.
What do you mean
military?
My issue, I think, Brother Pianki, is that you speak double. You change your position depending on the point you're making, because earlier you asserted that the black people, when you were speaking with regard to administrations at these schools, look to the white people to give them the information.
No,
to
I'm talking about. I was talking about public schools,
we're talking about a mentality. We're talking about a larger picture. I'm not trying to localize this to an education system or any other system. We're talking about groupthink. We're talking about a group, a nation of people, and their understanding. And you'll say that we have control of this, that, or the other thing, while we don't have basic primary control over our own children, our own lives, you know, and you'll admit that, but then you'll turn around and say, yeah, we do. We're controlling whole counties.
So you're saying that we don't have control over our children? I have control over mine.
Oh, do you? Do they go to public school? Are you homeschooling, or what are you doing?
Mine never did go to public schools, no.
Okay. Well, there's a possibility.
Pardon me?
I would at large.
The ones you have schools in Kansas City that's African centered. They've been controlled. Coming out of the National Black United Front, you got members that sit on the board that's been controlling their school district since the 1990s.
And who controls that board?
With who dollars?
Who controls that board, Pianki? Do you when
well,
your
what,
children come out?
Well, wait a minute.
First
well,
thing
they
do
they
is put a needle
a
in their arm and give them vaccines. What
they
are you? Who
into,
is funding? No. Who's funding this?
Right.
Well, you know, if you let me talk, I'll tell you.
Come on.
Okay.
Now, in this public school system, now they enter into a contract with the district, and they control those African centers.
No.
Schools.
Who's funding?
Had,
I didn't say that. Who's funding?
Well, they're using public money.
There you go.
But
the
there you go.
They're not. Okay, all right. Okay,
they
stop right there.
They're not controlling anything.
Well, let me ask you
something.
They're
not controlling
anything. Who controlled the Council of Independent? Who controlled the Council of Independent Black Institutions? Who had over 80 schools coming out of the Black Power movement?
Who's ever funding it? That's who controls
right.
it.
Right. Black people control
it. You can sit there and
black
look and have to look all you want. Who's funding it?
Right.
Black people funded those schools themselves.
Until black people
what?
Fund that
stop.
For Christmas.
Stop.
Yeah.
Stop.
You got a string of schools. You have a string of
okay,
schools.
Okay, I know
South
that
Central
you know
LA.
Your
you
individual control
Central
over
Central
your
LA.
You can stop now. You can stop.
That Coakley
you can stop.
Himself. That Coakley himself talks about, Marcus Garvey, they built all their buildings with black money. And I'll
okay,
tell
you.
Yeah.
You know better than to try and get me to believe that because you have control over your children, that that then translates to everybody having that type of control. And you know that's not true, and I know that you know that.
Well, we're not saying, it's quite natural it's not everybody, but here's the point. Just like Blueprint for Black Power, listen to this thing. It's a blueprint that should be followed.
Okay.
It ain't hardly nobody.
Didn't Amos Wilson give you the blueprint?
Yes, he did. Like, and I like what you just said earlier. You said Marcus Garvey, now they built their business with black money. And we know that these black charter schools that you other types of schools you just mentioned, they're not built with black money. And Marcus Garvey was sent to prison because he built it with black money.
I'm talking about Marcus Garvey Academy in Los Angeles. I didn't say
Academy,
Marcus Garvey.
Shipping company. Because he...
I said you have schools in South Central LA. One of them in particular is Marcus Garvey Academy.
Oh, okay.
That built all their schools, including their high school, used all black help. And Steve Coakley used to work in conjunction with the school. So if Black Blueprint for Black Power is a blueprint, these schools, not only that particular one, but the nearly 100 others, are blueprints that should be followed. Now, why come black folks don't follow them? Well, that's a question somebody else has to answer.
We answered it right now.
We answered it already, but you said racism doesn't exist.
Racism don't have anything to do with that. In St. Louis, they just started an African-centered public school. Nobody said that they couldn't do that. They did it because they wanted to do it.
So then you believe that everything that is wrong in the black community is simply because we just won't do it.
All right. In a lot of the cases, that is true.
Okay, that's
hey,
what
man,
you...
But you know what? St. Louis at the moment is being dismantled. Gentrification is taking place in St. Louis. All that stuff is going to be broken up.
Okay.
Pardon me?
I just came from St. Louis a couple of years ago. I said there's gentrification taking place in St. Louis. All of that
Don't
stuff is going to be broken
that's
up.
Okay.
Well, you had that same land reclamation going on in every major city. You had it in Chicago. You got it in St. Louis. You got it in Detroit going on now, too.
Oh, okay.
That's too pessimistic, Sean.
Okay. Well, all right.
Watch what happens eventually.
All right. We look forward to you keeping us informed and how this whole thing turns out.
You got 2 minutes, so.
Right, so we'll return next week to wrap up this part one of the lecture series on African falsification, African consciousness, and we'll move into the second part in the next couple of weeks. But we thank you all for turning out tonight, and we had a very live discussion. And we'll see you next week.
Next Wednesday. See you later. Peace.
Peace.
Bye.